What turns on a killer is the suffering and death of another human being. And as his determination builds to take another life, he plans in obsessive detail what props he'll bring, what knots he'll tie. Let me ask you guys something. What turns you on?
Welcome to Canvas and Crime, your ultimate destination for true crime and horror merchandise. Meet Elizabeth, the creative force behind canvasandcrime.com. She combined her passion for painting with her fascination for true crime and horror, giving birth to this unique shop.
You're looking for an intelligent white male, 20 to 30 years old, socially functional.
Are you a fan of serial killer memorabilia? You're in luck. Canvas and Crime has an incredible selection, from iconic mugs featuring notorious figures like Ted Bundy and the Zodiac Killer, to killer shot glass sets that showcase your favorite serial killers.
All I know to do is change your locks, tighten up your security, and pray.
But that's not all. You can also find custom prints of your most loved serial killer, adding a personal touch to your collection. For the most entertaining serial killer merchandise, look no further than canvasandcrime.com. Support a small business and dive into the chilling fun. Shop today, and don't forget to follow Canvas and Crime on YouTube as well.
You're listening to the Limitless Broadcasting Network.
I'm Bill Farmer. You're listening to the Pixie Dust Twins Podcast. Gorge!
All it takes is faith and trust. Oh, and something I forgot. Dust. Just a little bit of pixie dust.
I only hope that we never lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a mouse.
To live. To live will be an awfully big adventure.
Some imagination, huh?
Good day, mate.
I'm Mary Kate.
And I'm Ashley.
Samantha?
I don't even know it's Samantha.
Danny boy, where are you?
Hi-ho, Kermit the Frog here, and welcome to Muppet Vision 3D.
I may be dead, but I'm still pretty.
Oh, come on, Gar. We're here. Happiest place on Earth.
Shall we begin?
Welcome, Pixie Dusters. We're your favorite hosts. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Ashley. Welcome to the Pixie Dust Twins Podcast featuring Dan.
Hi there.
What an intro.
Produced by Limitless Broadcasting Network.
What an intro. Make sure you check out our social media. We've got YouTube Shorts, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok.
Yes, and we also have our website, www.limitlessbroadcasting.com. That was probably the best intro that you've ever done, in my opinion.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
All of a sudden, all you hear is a lightsaber start up, and it's like, okay, you know what month it is, Pixie Dust.
Clearly.
That lightsaber intro.
Clearly.
It is Star Wars month.
Yeah.
Ah, da, da. Sorry, I just watched the first one yesterday, and I have Duel of the Fates playing in my head.
It's great.
Oh, boy. Oh,
my gosh. I, melted as I, watched it. I'm like, it's so
it's
good.
So great.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I hate that Qui-Gon Jinn.
Qui-Gon.
Qui-Gon Jinn.
I was like, who?
Hold on a second.
What Star Wars character are we talking about?
Remember, I told you before this episode, I have not had any coffee today. So, things could happen. Ah. Hence, our last episode we did, I ranted. So we are in Star Wars month, people.
Yep.
My favorite month of the year. It's a thousand times better than Marvel.
How dare you say something I agree with?
Wait, are you agreeing with me or her?
Thank you.
I
hate Marvel. Marvel's fine. But,
Two against one, Sammy. Haha.
It's just a bunch of nerds up in here. That's the problem.
You are also a nerd.
Not for Star Wars.
Oh, we all got our,
We all got our things.
We all got our
You're
things.
You're a horror nerd.
I got our things.
You're a Disney nerd.
I know.
Okay.
Who knows? One day we might throw a Star Trek month in there. Why not?
That's blasphemous.
It's not bad. It's not bad. Hey. I'm a fan of both. I like both.
I don't like it enough to do a podcast about it.
I have not watched any Star Trek except like the movies. So, yeah.
Oh, with Chris Pine?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are okay.
They're fun. Mm-hmm. They're fun.
They're fun. I hate them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, goodness. But anyways, we're not talking about Star Trek. We were talking about Star Wars.
Yes.
And before we start in on our topic for today, I did see a reel, and I just confirmed it with an article, that Gina Carino, who plays, I don't remember what her character's name is, in the Mandalorian TV series before they kind of said you're done and fired her. Mm-hmm. As apparently, as soon as Filoni took back over, her Filoni and Favreau got on a call, and she said the first words that John said to me were, "Okay, where did we leave off on the last time we were talking about you being back in Star Wars?"
Oh,
so there's okay. a possibility
she back. Mm-hmm.
We don't know for sure because she didn't say everything that was going. She's like, I will not tell you exactly what was talked about, which mm-hmm. I mean, fair. Mm-hmm. But there is a possibility that she might be coming back.
Nice.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. You so apparently see. Filoni and Favreau were not happy with the firing.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. my assumption. I mean, a lot of people if they're talking to her right away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what it sounds like.
And speaking of Mandalorian, we get The Mandalorian and Grogu this month.
Okay.
22nd right. of May.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. A movie will be out in theaters. Go see it. I know I am. Mm-hmm. Super excited.
Oh, it's a movie in theaters? Oh, I didn't know. I don't go to movies
like
anymore.
Legit theater movie. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Really? Mm-hmm. I just went to a movie yesterday. Barely.
The last movie I saw in the theaters was like, I want to say Wicked. Or like one of the Wicked movies, maybe. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's either that or Beetlejuice. I think it was Wicked.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I just saw The Devil Wears Prada 2 yesterday.
Okay.
I will be seeing that in a week because I don't go opening weekend.
My gosh, it was so good.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. I figured it would be.
Anyone going to see the Michael Jackson movie? That looks pretty good.
We're debating, potentially.
I have not decided yet because that would be me by myself. Yeah. I don't think my husband wants to see that.
Not a fan.
I don't think so. I don't think he is.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that his nephew.
Yeah.
Nephew is playing him. That's
looking at I've looked at some of the clips in the trailers. It's like, they really went out of their way to, oh my gosh.
Yep.
Crazy.
His mannerisms, everything. I'm like, dang.
All of it.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even just like the recreation of like the first time, like the performing the Billie Jean for the first time. And it's like, it's like, this is as close to what it'll feel like to probably have actually been there, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really cool.
Oh yeah. So lots of good movies coming out. So go see them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we're going to continue on with our Star Wars day, week, month, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we are going to do a bio episode about Dave Filoni because the infamous Filoni has now taken over as president and chief creative officer of Lucasfilms as of this year.
Mm-hmm. Yay! Yep.
Mm-hmm. If you don't know who Dave Filoni is or never heard that name, because all you do is watch like maybe like the movies of Star Wars and you aren't into the craziness of it, he is huge in the Star Wars world and we're going to learn more about him today.
Okay.
So Dave Filoni was born June 7th, 1974. Ooh. So he's a June baby with Sammy.
He's a Gemini.
He is a Gemini, which kind of makes sense with Star Wars. He was born in Pennsylvania. And he is an American director, writer, producer, and animator. And like I said, who is now the president and chief creative officer at Lucasfilms. He is actually widely known as the creative protege of George Lucas. And I have that story a little later in the episode. And he is often described as the person carrying forward Lucas's original vision for Star Wars, which I would agree with because his stuff is taken more seriously and loved by a lot more Star Wars fans than some of the other stuff that's been done lately. mm-hmm. and is a very good choice for being head of Lucasfilm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But before he got there, of course, he was a child like all of us. He grew up in Mount Lebanon in Pennsylvania, and he studied animation at the Edinburgh University of Pennsylvania, graduating in 96. And mm-hmm. he was inspired heavily by Western films, classic animation, and mythology storytelling, which helped later shape his Star Wars work. Mm-hmm. Now, before Lucasfilms, he built his reputation in animation. He worked on Avatar, The Last Airbender, the original first season. Mm-hmm. Worked as a director and storyboard artist. And this was actually the role that, the roles that were crucial in him getting noticed by George Lucas. Mm-hmm. Some other things he worked on was King of the Hill and Miss Kim Possible.
Crazy.
I never knew that.
Did not know that.
Got some Disney connections there. Mm-hmm.
Even Dave Filoni likes propane. I don't know anything about King of the Hill other than propane. That's all I know about it.
I know nothing about King of the Hill, yeah.
I know very little, so...
Yeah. So he established a very strong visual storytelling career for serialized animation, which, again, we see later on. So the big turning point in his career was in 2005 when he got his big break with George Lucas. And he was personally recruited by George. He, like, saw him and he, like, went and got him, particularly to help build Lucasfilm animation from the ground up. So it literally... Any animation you see with George Lucas' name on it is Filoni, who built it from nothing to what we have today, which is Clone Wars and Rebels and now Shadow Maul. Like, it's all like he started this. So that's it was great. A huge deal. I know. And especially to like have the trust from George Lucas, like the mm-hmm. George Lucas, to create something from the ground up. For Star Wars, that had to be
no
a
pressure
lot
whatsoever.
Of pressure,
yeah,
but
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of fun. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So kind of how they actually met. He was working on The Last Airbender, and like I already said, he developed all these different things, storytelling, mythology, and character-driven arcs, and it caught George's attention, so they brought him in for an interview. Now, apparently Filoni has told the story in multiple interviews, so this is pretty accurate on how it goes. But when he interviewed at Lucasfilm around 2005, George Lucas didn't just ask about animation skills. Instead, Lucas asked Filoni about themes in Star Wars. He specifically challenged him on the Phantom Menace episodes and asked him what specifically about the Duel of Fates, and Filoni explained that the film's core theme is the Duel of Fates, and it represents the fate of Anakin, because if Qui-Gon lived, Anakin is guided properly, and he probably wouldn't become Vader. If Qui-Gon dies, Anakin falls under Obi-Wan, leading to future tragedy, which is sad, because that's saying, like, Obi-Wan wasn't good enough, but, I mean, I just rewatched Phantom Menace, and Obi-Wan did not have any faith that this boy was supposed to be a Jedi, like when it started. Mm-hmm. He only took him on because his master wanted him to. It was a sense of duty, not like true believance in who Anakin potentially could be. Qui-Gon really was the one who believed that he could be a huge influence in the Force. So Filoni explain that, like, his philosophy on that to Lucas, and Lucas is like, stamp of approval, yes, come work for us.
It's like, yes,
and Lucas,
you get it.
He was impressed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. And probably why, I mean, I always knew it was very, that scene, that fight was very pivotal, but like, it never dawned on me, Duel of Fates and what that title meant to what was happening until I kind of was doing this. I'm like, oh, connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I also just made that connection like 30 seconds ago.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You already know. I don't know what's going on. So, yeah.
Thank you, Filoni. Mm-hmm. And so that moment is widely cited as the reason that Lucas personally chose him. Was because okay. he understood George's mind when none of us really understand. Like, no one understands George's mind, but apparently Filoni does. So he started building Lucasfilm Animation, and it was before this, Lucasfilm, it was not primarily focused on films. There was no major in-house animation pipeline for TV. So Lucas wanted to expand Star Wars into a long-form animation. The only thing they really had was like the Ewok animation that they did, those two seasons. But it wasn't, I mean, the animation was wildly different in both seasons, and it was bad. So they really had room for lots and lots of approval. So the headquarters was in Singapore and in California, but mostly in Singapore. And the goal was to produce high quality CG animated Star Wars content. And Filoni was brought in as the foundational creative leader, not just director. So he moved all the pieces.
Okay.
So he began supervising. He was the supervising director of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Mm-hmm. So if you guys remember when we did the animation, the original Clone Wars TV show was not the first one. I believe it was the second one that they did. He started one and then it kind of transformed into something else. Let's see here. Lucas. So what would happen is Lucas would pitch big ideas, themes, arcs, and sometimes give rough outlines or concepts. And then what Filoni did, he was able to turn all of those things into structured episodes, built character arcs, and continuity, which, hello, what we kind of needed for episode 7, 8, and 9, George literally gave them everything for 7, 8, and 9, and they didn't do what Filoni does. They ignored it.
It's like here's the blueprints, here's the plan, here's everything that's going to make this good. They looked at it and goes, get this thing out of my sight.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, I really want to know what led Disney to bringing in Kathleen instead of Filoni the first time around, because Filoni had George's approval. I don't know if Kathleen did.
I'm not going to pretend to know that relationship. I know she's been there from the beginning. I know she's been a core part of things in that whole world. So who's to say at this point? I mean, I have my guesses on it. I mean, I believe a lot of it, you know, I mean, everything's money motivated, but I feel like a lot of this was more cash cow motivated than story trueness motivated. So, but I mean, that was just such a weird time for this franchise. And that was such a, everything was so all over the place back then.
Yeah. Tell me about it. It's kind of Disney in general right now. So another thing he helped establish was the tone, because animation, when you think animation, you normally think, oh, kids, especially in the early 2000s. It's like, oh, children. Nowadays, like, you know, there's adults who still love animation and there's adult animations and different things. But Filoni knew, I think, innately that I need to just not make the kids happy. I also have Star Wars adults that I need to make happy in this animation. And he found that balance between kid-friendly adventure and mature themes.
Yeah.
And he did serialized storytelling, which was very rare for animation at that time. Shoot, I forgot to look up exactly what this means, because apparently I thought it was one thing and it is not. Serialized... What does it mean? In literature, a serial is a printing or publishing format by which a single larger work often a work of narrative fiction is published in smaller sequential installments. So
I thought for television that serialized just meant that each episode ties into the other, that they're not individual stories.
I don't know.
That's my understanding of serialized storytelling.
Serial storytelling works better when there's... Sure, we're going to go with yours.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
That's how it's communicated. That's how we interpret it. Let's go with that. That's how we understand it. If we're wrong, then we'll, I don't know, pray a prayer of forgiveness or something. I don't know, whatever.
We'll ask forgiveness later.
That's forgiveness, not permission.
Yeah, it's ask for forgiveness and better than permission. He helped train storyboard artists and directors. He helped maintain consistency across episodes. Because if you've watched Star Wars Clone Wars, like from beginning to end, there is a lot, like a lot of like potential to have plot holes or miss, like we did one thing over here, but now we're contradicting it over here. Like that happens a lot in TV. Yeah. He is very good at making sure there's consistency, which is probably why I love him so much, because I rarely watch a Filoni Star Wars creation and find the things that bug me, which are plot holes and mistakes. So, except apparently Sam Witwer has been like the only person to ever correct Filoni. I can't remember what he corrected him on. I think it had something to do with Padme. And Filoni's like, you're right. We need to fix this. It was in like the Clone Wars. Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So I have major respect for both of them. Yeah. And then he acted as a bridge between Lucas and the animation crew. So think of him as the interpreter of George Lucas's brain into actual television. Mm-hmm. Lucas's brain seems like a very scary, amazing place. And I wonder if Filoni feels that way. Like if it...
Yeah,
probably.
Go in. It's like the, you know, it's like the priesthood. It's like you go in, you make the commitment and you're all in, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And during this time, he had a lot of hands-on mentorship from George. He didn't work for George. He was trained by George. Like this is very much a Jedi master apprentice kind of relationship, not a, you work for me, I'll fire you in any moment sort of relationship.
Yeah.
So he taught him the mythological storytelling structure. He taught, the sun went away. It got really dark in here. Oh, I can see myself now. Sorry, ADD. He taught him thematical layering, like the good versus evil, balanced destiny, visual pacing, and cinematic language. And Filoni said he would sit in on long meetings with Lucas, breaking down story philosophy, and then get direct feedback on scripts, characters, and even small details. So it was very much like a respectful, like working relationship, awesome. Which is cool.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Now, why the Clone Wars were so important. So important.
It filled gaps. Filled so many gaps. Mm-hmm.
Oh, they filled gaps and they actually made me like Anakin better.
That too. It made me like Jar Jar, for God's sake. Like, I mean.
I know. I just watched an episode where Jar Jar like saved Padme.
Yeah, no, he's got like a whole death. Four episodes of just following him doing stuff. And it's like, oh man. he's actually kind of a hero.
But it also provided Star Wars could work in long form TV, or proved that Star Wars could work in long form TV. Yeah. It established some deep canon storytelling. Like we have a lot more like worlds and characters and just deeper things that we can latch onto. And it created one of my favorite characters in the whole freaking world, Miss Ahsoka Tano.
Right.
Like, hello, we got Snips. Snips is amazing. Honestly, I like Snips better than Anakin, but that's my own thing.
A lot of people do.
I agree.
I would argue, and this may be a slight hot take. Wait, is that the next episode? Or are we doing hot takes now? Or
that is the next episode, but you can bring it up now. That's fine.
I think I've said this before, but I would argue that Ahsoka is the best of Anakin's legacy over his own children.
Oh, yeah.
This may be a hot take, but they never had any relationship with Anakin. They had a relationship with Vader, a very bad one. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Luke had his own, you know, communicative things with the Force and all that. But no, the only person who actually passed on or had anything passed on to them one-on-one, master to apprentice, from Anakin was Ahsoka. And like the best of Anakin in his legacy is reflected in Ahsoka.
Amen! Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, you're so right. I so agree. And if anybody disagrees with that, they don't have to listen to our podcast. You can go away.
I mean, you know, we're all gonna our own things, but yeah.
Where did I leave off? Sorry. Oh, and Clone Wars internally validated Lucasfilm's animation as a permanent division because they didn't know if it was going to work. And if it wasn't going to work, it was going to fall to the cracks. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And so thus the permanent division of Lucasfilm's animation began. So major career milestones at Lucasfilms for Filoni was, of course, Clone Wars era from 2008 to 2020, because, you know, we didn't get that season 7 until 2020. Why'd it take you so freaking long? Sorry.
My bad. I mean, everything takes long, anyways.
I know, but it was so long. Like, technically, the series ended in, like, 2000...
Shoot. I don't even know.
Seven, I want to say 12 or 13.
It was a long time ago.
And then all of a sudden, like six years later, we have
closure,
a new season, and we're like, excuse me. I mean, it was nice. It was closure. Yeah. It came after Rebels, which it's like, I think that's why they had to do it, is because Rebels gave us like all this new like life of Ahsoka, and we're like, I'm sorry. What happened?
Yeah.
Like, what happened between Clone Wars and here?
Right. So I think
we had to know. But yeah, anyways. His roles there were supervising director, writer, and executive producer. The impact of Clone Wars was expanded the lore, of course, Ahsoka, and it won multiple Emmys for an animation. I forgot to look those up, but it's fine. We probably talked about him in the Clone Wars back in 2022.
Right.
And this is where Filoni became known as the lore guy. And it's very true, and we love him for it. Then, of course, after Clone Wars, he started building the animated universe. We have Rebels, Resistance, Bad Batch, and Tales of the Jedi. We also have Tales of the Empire now. I think they forgot about this on here. And now also Shadow Maul. And I think Visions. I'm pretty sure he's involved in Visions, which is the samurai style anime.
Well, no, it's like a bunch of different little animes that were kind of
So again, filled in gaps between movies, deepened mythology, built fan favorite characters and story arcs, which we still have today. So then he transitioned to live action, and this is where we get Sammy's favorite, which is The Mandalorian, where he was executive producer, writer, and director, and co-created with Jon Favreau, who was happy in Iron Man. Which also led then to Book of Boba Fett, which honestly, they should have just freaking wrapped that into one episode, like one season, The Mandalorian. And then Ahsoka, which we get season 2 here and soon in like December, I think.
Okay.
I can't remember. I'll have to look. He was the creator and sole writer of Ahsoka, which valid. He created Ahsoka.
Right. It's so his character.
It's his place. Massive moment. He brings his animated character into real life, which was fantastic to see. I need Disney to listen to me right now. I need in Disney World, not Disneyland, Disney World. I need an Ahsoka meet and greet. I want to meet her. I want a picture and I want an autograph. I need this. They're going to do it, but they're going to put it in Disneyland.
Yeah,
probably.
Probably. Probably.
So sick of Disneyland getting all the good things. They just had a Disneyland Star Wars night. They had an actual like Queen Padme Amidala. They had Anakin. They had all these characters. I'm like, why do we not get this?
No idea.
Well, probably because they're punishing us because we roast them all the time. So, you know. Well, Disney World people do roast kind of
do
Disney.
Better.
They're like, fine, you're going to make fun of our tiny castle. We're going to take all your characters and we're going to keep them. You get Mickey.
It's all out of spite.
Go home and cry about it.
They even, I mean, for crying out loud, they have the Marvel campus. They should be happy.
Yeah.
They have Pixar Place. Be happy. At least your stuff makes sense.
Yes.
Oh, goodness gracious. So some key, he rose through leadership over time. Key promotions, he became the chief creative officer in 2023. So that has not changed. but he just tacked on this year, the president, alongside co-president, who I have not looked into yet, and I probably should, Lynwyn Brennan. She is the co-president with him. I have no clue who this woman is. And I don't know if she's supposed to be like, remind me, who was George Lucas's leash in the first three, or like the original movies?
Jabba the Hutt? Nothing. I was making a bad joke.
He said Jabba. Yeah.
Jabba. No. Yeah. No, Dan. Like, there was a producer, and I can't remember his name, and we talked about him intensively in 2021. That was kind of George's leash, where he said no to George a lot. Wondering if you don't?
No.
I don't remember.
Yeah, like, everyone, there was someone, or maybe multiple someone, who, like, George would want something, and they would say no to the majority of it. Like, they would keep it scaled back. And then in the prequels, one would say no to him, and it went kind of crazy. You don't remember talking about that.
I remember there was a lot of studio pushback in general. I don't remember one specific person.
Well, it was one of the producers that had to always tell him, like, from the rest of the people, like, no.
Okay.
You couldn't do this.
Maybe. Okay. I'm getting a little
I can't remember his name. Right. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this new Lin-Wen is like Filoni's, like,
evidently
boundary.
Going to the prequel thing, evidently there actually was a lot of pushback from him. He just had more power than the people who were pushing back.
So, yes. Well, yeah, like, there's always pushback, but he didn't, like, he's like, I'm sorry, this is my studio. Like, shut up. It's my money.
It's my money. I do what I want.
Let's see. I do what I want. Yeah, pretty much. Okay. She is a British-born American corporate executive who, she joined Industrial Light and Magic in 99.
Oh, wow.
And became its president in 2009. 2015, she was the general manager of Lucasfilm, and now is co-president with Filoni. Okay, so she's been in Star Wars for a long time. So, okay, so she's just not somebody random coming in, so that's good. But, you know, as long as she doesn't leash Filoni too much on how Star Wars should go, we should be fine. So let's see here. We already talked about most of his filmology. Like I said, he has Mandalorian and Grogu coming up this month. Oh, Skeleton Crew. He was also in charge of the TV series Skeleton Crew. Super amazing. Go watch. It was really cute. So to kind of wrap everything up, why does Filoni matter? He matters because he bridges generations of Star Wars. He unified canon storytelling. He expanded the Star Wars movies from animation, streaming, and interconnected universe. And he represented internal promotion success. So really, I don't know why this is in here. Really great guy to take over for Lucasfilms. This is a good move. I feel like Disney's had a lot of good moves lately. We've gotten Josh DeMario in. In as CEO of Disney. We now have Filoni as CEO and or COO and president of Lucasfilms. We're kind of moving in the right direction. So good job, Disney.
Agreed.
Yeah. Anybody have anything to add or questions before we wrap?
No, I'm excited. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. It'll be good.
Yeah, I'm super excited too. All right, folks. Well, this was our first episode of Star Wars Month with Mr. Filoni. Next week, we're taking a slight break of Star Wars, doing our anniversary episode because, you know, 6 years, big deal. Especially in the podcast world. And then the next week after that, we'll come back to Star Wars, and it's going to be called Star Hot Take Wars. So we could get debatey. It could get heated. Or you just might get mad at us. I don't know. We'll see. You have to come back and find out. And then we'll end the month with a trivia that all three of us can participate in. It's called a Kahoot. If you've never heard of Kahoots, it's an educational tool that I used while I was at church. So it's fun. I'm excited.
Okay.
So may the fourth be with you always. Bye, Pixie Dusters.
Bye.
Later.
thanks for listening. This podcast is part of Limitless Broadcasting Network. Check out our website for information about the hosts, merch, and all of our podcasts. Production for today's episode was handled by the Dream Team, Ashley Danny and Sammy Brooksby. A final special thanks to Dan. His discerning perspective is the secret ingredient that helps us see the bigger picture.
Calling all you horror enthusiasts. If you are brave enough, we dare you to listen to our horror podcast, You Can't Kill the Boogeyman Podcast, produced by 1950 Studios and distributed by Limitless Broadcasting Network. This show is available wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, everyone is entitled to one good scare. Don't forget to subscribe to LimitlessBroadcastingNetwork.com.